From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Great to see you. We've got the wonderful Shirley Jones, star of Oklahoma and The Music Man, the mom from the Partridge Family. She's coming on to play our games later. But first, we couldn't help but notice this week that those funsters over at NBC's Today Show had an adorable feature called Fact or Fiction, in which their panel has to choose between a fake news story and a real one. Well, I wonder where they got that idea. Well, all right, fine. Shot across our bows. It is only fair if we steal some of their shtick. So, on this week's episode, we're going to fire the beloved Ann Curry and get crushed in the ratings by Good Morning America. Anyway, you know who to call for the original version of Silly Games About the News. That's us, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT, or 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there.
Who's this?
Madeline.
Hey, Madeline, where are you calling from?
I'm from Los Angeles.
How are things in beautiful L.A.?
It's gorgeous, absolutely perfect.
Oh, it's that beautiful time of year in L.A., between the misery of the summer and the, well, misery of the winter.
I'll talk to you in February.
All right, it's better. What do you do there?
I'm a teacher at USC.
Oh, really? What do you teach there?
I teach writing.
Do you really?
Uh-huh.
So, does anybody ever come to L.A. and want to write anything other than screenplays?
I don't think so.
No, anymore. Well, welcome to the show, Madeline. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, a comedian you can see at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco, California, October 17th through the 20th. It's Maz Jobrani is back with us.
Hi, Madeline.
Hello there.
I miss L.A.
Next, it's one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Roxanne Roberts is here.
Hello.
Finally, it's the man behind Esquire's politics blog and a contributor to Grantland, Charlie Pierce.
Hey, Madeline.
Hey, Charlie.
I thought maybe you taught cursive.
Madeline, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Of course, Carl Castle, giant that he is going to recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, of course, explain or identify two of them. Do that. You get Carl's voice on your answering device, whatever it may be.
Okay.
You ready to play?
Oh, I sure am.
Okay. Your first quote comes from outer space. It's a message to America.
Farewell, humans. Sort it out yourselves.
That was a tweet from the Voyager 2 spacecraft. Its parent organization, NASA, is shuttered for the moment thanks to what?
Well, the shutdown of the government.
Exactly right. The government is shut down, has been all week. You know, anarchy seemed a lot more fun in the Mad Max movies. Yeah, the parks are closed. Hundreds of thousands of people are out of work, but they kept the essential stuff going. If they really wanted us to care about this, they should have gone for it. Release the animals in the National Zoo. Open up the dams. Once we've got bloodthirsty tigers swimming down the street, watch the bipartisanship happen.
Why don't they stop with programs that we don't like? We should be able to vote. Like stop first defund the meter maids and the IRS. You know what I'm saying? Places.
Well, that's almost what they're doing.
Are there federal meter maids?
I don't know.
Frightening thought.
But I want to stop funding them.
This all began, as we know, when the Republicans in the House refused to fund the government if they couldn't get rid of Obamacare. And as the week has gone on, they've more or less given that up. But now, what do they want? Nobody knows. Indiana Republican Congressman Martin Stutzman said, quote, "We're not going to be disrespected. We have to get something out of this, and I don't know what that even is." Unquote.
It's a trip for two to lovely Hawaii.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So now in order to get out of this, we have to find something to give the Republicans so they feel they've won something.
You get a car.
Well, but there's no money, so it has to be something inexpensive, but they have to feel good, like a participation medal, a Mr. Total Lack of Congeniality sash, or maybe just as a concession, we can let each member of the House pick one old person that they can allow to die.
This reminds me of me dealing with my 2-year-old daughter. That's how it is. Like, she doesn't know what she wants, and
right.
It changes.
I'm just unhappy crying. Why are you unhappy? I don't know. I've been there.
It's a lollipop 1 second, and then it's jelly beans. So maybe lollipops and jelly beans.
Yeah, it's whatever they can't have at the moment.
Yeah,
and then 10 minutes later you give it to them. 10 minutes later it's on the ground.
Yeah, and if like you turn on Dora the Explorer, then they're gone. Yeah. That's all you got to do.
Maybe that's it.
We should show Dora the Explorer at Congress.
Yeah, big screens.
Big screens.
You know,
just reruns.
Yeah. And you can just imagine the entire Tea Party caucus staring at the screen going, "Swiper, no swiping." And meanwhile...
Yeah.
Well, you'd see the entire Tea Party caucus demanding to see Dora's papers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Madeline, your next quote is from a website for a promising new government program that launched this week.
"Please wait. We have a lot of visitors on our site right now, and we're working to make your experience here better."
What was the program? Keep going.
It's the one that they shut down because... do you mean the Affordable Care Act?
Yes, which everybody knows these days as Obamacare. Yeah. The very day the government stopped... Tuesday, the 1st, the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, also known as the greatest threat to freedom since the Galactic Empire, started its enrollment programs. Anybody who wanted to could go to one of many websites from all over the country to sign up for inexpensive health insurance. In some states like New York, people waited all day long and just kept getting those annoying 404 government handout not found pages.
It was good, though, Peter, because I got this great deal on a $9 million insurance policy from this Nigerian firm.
Oh, it's awesome.
How come those websites got to stay online when every other federal, are these non-federal?
This actually is one of the bizarre ironies of this situation. The Obamacare Affordable Care Act is self-funded in its own legislation. So it has nothing to do with that. So the Republicans who wanted Obamacare defunded managed to shut down everything but Obamacare. And it's crazy. So they did that. And it turns out, meanwhile, the person to shut down Obamacare was Brad in IT, who forgot to turn on the second server. That's the guy. They screwed this up, this launch. They got so overwhelmed. They should have handed it over to the people who really know how to run websites. Like, let Netflix do it. They do high volume. Then if then Netflix did Obamacare, we'd also get recommendations. It was like, based on your choices, you like dialysis with a strong female lead. Or maybe Amazon, they're great at this, and it would say, people who looked at healthcare also looked at self-appendectomy for dummies and graves. All right, Madeline, here is your last quote.
Okay.
"Screw off, flight attendant. I'm not turning it off during landing and takeoff. I have Candy Crush to play."
That was a tweet from an airline passenger named Robert Anderson. He may no longer have to break the rules. What may soon be allowed on planes?
Access to your internet and computer.
Yes, exactly. You get to use your devices on planes. This is big news.
Yay!
All this other stuff going on in Washington, who cares? This is the news you need to know. An FAA advisory panel concluded this week that despite what every flight attendant has told us forever, our cell phones, iPads, Google Glass, Crock-Pots, what have you, they don't pose any danger to the plane's safety, even during takeoff and landing. This means that we can finally get rid of that last pesky 10 minutes in which we're forced to read a book or talk to another human being.
They tell you that it might interfere with the plane, but now you're saying it doesn't.
Well, the FAA has decided that all the things, that the internet connections, all that, it doesn't matter.
So wouldn't that be weird? I mean, I hope they test it, because that would be weird if you tried it and then suddenly the plane's control is on your phone.
It's like, oh, God, that'd be fun. Let's go left. Let's go right.
Turn it off.
Hey, speaking of changing things, I got on my plane in Boston today and I could leave my belt on and my shoes and my jacket. They just shuffled me right through the metal detector.
They gave me a knife on the way in.
That's awesome. Carl, how did Madeline do?
Madeline, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine or voicemail.
Well done. Thank you, Madeline. We're thrilled for you.
Okay.
Great to talk to you. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Thank you. We want to remind everyone they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roxanne, pop sensation Justin Bieber was recently in China, and like any other tourist, he visited the Great Wall. But unlike any other tourist we've heard of, he needed his bodyguards to do what?
To carry him to the Great Wall.
Yes, indeed. No one is sure if young Master Justin was simply too tired to walk all the way up the Great Wall, or he just needed a special boost to see over the edge. Here you go, Justin. Either way, having his bodyguards carry him seemed fitting for an artist whose biggest hit was a song called Baby. It was kind of cute. The bodyguard carried him in a special carrier called a Bieber Bjorn. And that's an improvement over the how they used to do it when he was a little bit younger. That's when the bodyguard used to just pick him up with his teeth by the scruff of the neck. It was very cute.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Maz Jobrani, Roxanne Roberts, and Charlie Pierce. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Tim from Janesville, Wisconsin.
Hey, beautiful Janesville.
Beautiful is a word you could use for it, yeah.
Yes. Well, what do you do there?
Like for fun?
No, for any. If you have fun, sure.
Well, for fun, we mostly go to Madison.
Oh, really? Well, welcome to the show, Tim. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Tim's topic?
Peter, it's time we embraced our inner sluts.
It's been 10 years since Sex and the City inspired women everywhere to move to New York, sleep around, and spend all their money on shoes. This week we read about how Carrie Bradshaw and her three neurotic friends are continuing to curse or bless our culture. Guess the true Sex and the City-related story, and you will win Mr. Carl's voice on your voicemail. Ready to play?
I guess so. I know nothing about Sex and the City.
You know, you weren't a fan of the show then?
No.
All right.
You still got time to go to Madison. Just go. Just go, baby.
Might be a better option than playing this game, but we'll try it. Here we go. Your first story comes from Roxanne Roberts.
The nicest guy on Sex and the City may have been Stanford Blanche, Carrie's gay best friend. He was loyal, funny, quirky, sweet, almost perfect. So British supermarket chain Tesco thought everyone should have one too, hence the inflatable gay best friend, a novelty blow-up doll, quote, ready to give you fashion advice, tell you if your bum looks big, and bitch about everyone who doesn't wear Jimmy Choo's. IGBF, as I like to call it, sports a pink top and blue shorts, which caused an outcry as an offensive stereotype. Not to mention the shade of pink was all wrong. But gay activists were more dismissive than upset. Quote, this is like trying to sell ice to Eskimos, Ben Summerskill told The Guardian. We can't imagine why any woman would choose to buy an inflatable gay best friend when there are 2 million of the real thing already available in modern Britain. And most of them are much better looking than Tesco's pale imitation. The chain has since apologized and withdrawn IGBF from sale.
All right. An inflatable gay best friend, just like Carrie had, if somewhat quieter. Your next story of a Sex and the City sequel no one asked for comes from Charlie Pierce.
Trainees at FBI headquarters in Quantico, Virginia, are being drilled in a new interrogation technique aimed at prying information and confessions out of suspects who are in custody. The suspect is left in a room with two agents and is shown an endless loop of videos from the television show Sex and the City. Originally, it was thought that it would take 8 or 9 hours of watching the episodes to elicit the desired result, but instructors at the FBI Academy say in field experiments with the technique, even some of the most hardened suspects break after only half of their first episode. The technique is so promising that the FBI is already refining its details. Agents are being educated in the differences between Jimmy Choo's and Manolo Blahnik's, the proper way to make a Cosmo, and the many different kinds of cupcakes you can find in New York City. And special investigative units are being put together, made up exclusively of field agents named Carrie, Charlotte, Miranda, and Samantha.
Sex and the City used as an interrogation technique. Your last story about the lasting legacy of Carrie Bradshaw comes from Maz Jobrani.
Any woman who's worn Manolo Blahnik shoes knows that they are sexy. But did you know that those high-heeled expensive beauties featured so lovingly on Sex and the City can also be used as lethal weapons? Inspired by the episode where Carrie gets mugged in Soho and the guy takes her Blahniks, Tone Rodriguez opened up his own self-defense class for ladies in South Beach, Miami, called Blahniks Kicks. Using martial arts techniques he learned as a black belt in Buk Fu, Rodriguez teaches women how to take off the Blahniks at one fell swoop and be armed within seconds. Tone was quoted as saying, "The next time someone tells you, 'Give me your Blahniks,' all you have to do is say, 'My pleasure.' Then take them off and proceed to beat the crap out of them." Student Mallory Hampton explains how at Blahniks Kicks, they're taught to only use their moves as a last resort. Never start a fight, but always finish it. Rodriguez says that Sex and the City wasn't his only inspiration. "When I was a child, my mother used to beat me with her shoes. Sometimes even twice a day. I mean, I was a bad kid, so I kind of deserved it. Later, when I was teaching self-defense, I realized the shoes, and particularly Blahniks, could serve as a great weapon. Sexy going into the clubs, badass coming out."
All right, here are your choices. From Roxanne Roberts, the Tesco supermarket chain in Britain offers the inflatable gay best friend for those who want to be Carrie and want that ultimate accessory. From Charlie Pierce, Sex and the City used as an interrogation technique in Quantico at the FBI Academy. Or from Maz Jobrani, Blahniks Kicks, a self-defense technique which uses very expensive high-heeled shoes. Which of these is the real story of a Sex and the City revival, kinda, in the week's news?
I'm going to go with the gay best friend.
The inflatable gay bestie?
Yes.
Ooh, the audience may not approve, but you seem very confident.
I swear I heard something about this.
All right. You have chosen Roxanne's story of the inflatable gay best friend. Well, to bring you the correct answer, listen to this.
Tesco has withdrawn an inflatable figure that it was selling labeled gay best friend.
That's right. You were correct. It's an inflatable figure of a gay best friend that was offered by Tesco. They're not offering it anymore, so don't get excited. Congratulations, Tim. You got it right. Roxanne was telling the truth. You somehow knew that. Therefore, you won a point for Roxanne. And, of course, our prize, Carl's voice on your voicemail. Well done, sir.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you for playing. And now the game where people who've done amazing things for a long time do something very bizarre for a short while. It's called Not My Job. Shirley Jones starred in some of the great movie musicals of the 1950s. Oklahoma, Carousel, The Music Man. She won an Oscar along the way. And then she went on to be the mother in the classic sitcom, The Partridge Family. She's written a new memoir. She joins us now. Shirley Jones, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Your story, you had one of, and I'm not going to say you didn't deserve it, but you had one of the easiest rises to fame I've ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so tell me what happened.
Well, you know, I wanted to be a veterinarian. I was an only child in a small town of Smithton, Pennsylvania, adored animals, raised everything in the world, you know, and decided that was going to be what I was going to do. But I could sing. It was given to me. It was a gift. And yeah. I thought everybody could sing. And so I would sing everywhere and be, you know, went to the Pittsburgh Playhouse and did some drama and dancing and so forth. Still wanted to be a vet. Went to New York on my way to college and went to an audition for Rodgers and Hammerstein. I sang for the casting director and he said, "I'd like you to sing for Mr. Rodgers." And I didn't even know who Richard Rodgers was then.
Right.
I was 18 and he came down the aisle and he said, "Miss Jones," and I said, "What'd you say your name was again?" He said, "Richard Rodgers." Never to forget that moment. I sang for him, and he said, "Would you wait? I'm going to call my partner, Oscar Hammerstein." I waited, and my pianist had to leave, and so he said, don't worry, we'll figure something out. Well, there was a symphony across the street. And he said, Miss Jones, you can come over and sing with the symphony for Oscar Hammerstein. I'd never heard a symphony, seen one, or sang with one, certainly.
So you walk into New York. You're there on a college trip.
Exactly right.
You go in on audition on a lark, and the next thing you know, you're singing for Rodgers and Hammerstein,
right,
the guys themselves, with a symphony orchestra.
Right.
And I want the kids out there who are thinking about a career in show business, that's how it works for pretty much everybody.
Not really, but...
And you went into one of their shows in New York, but
I went into South Pacific the last 3 months of the Broadway show, and then they sent me to California to screen test for the role of Laurie in Oklahoma, and that's what happened.
And so the next thing you know, now you're 21, and you were playing the lead in the musical mm-hmm. adaptation of the biggest musical in American history.
Mm-hmm.
Again, pretty much standard. I love the fact that you also tell in the book that... that Richard Rodgers became first in a long line of show businessmen to hit on you.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, he asked me up to his office, and I was sitting there, and he put his arm around me, and then I suddenly saw him go and lock the door, you know, in the office, and came over, put his arm around me again, and he said, do you have a boyfriend? And I said, oh, yes, I'm engaged. Of course, that was not true. I said, I'm engaged. He's waiting for me. And he said, oh, really? Well, it's too bad. You won't be there for a long time. I said, I know. And I said, well, you know, I'm so thrilled to be here. And I said, the fact that I have a wonderful grandpa right next to me.
Oh! Harsh. What did he do?
He said, oh, okay.
I mean, and then you were on the set of the movie and Rod Steiger hits on you?
Yeah, a little bit.
So one of the stories I loved about you after all that story is like you actually had one co-star who wouldn't kiss you, even on screen.
Well, Pat Boone.
Well, there you are.
Of course. And guess what? We just did a thing together, Pat and I. They did a screening of April Love at the Egyptian Theater, and they, you know, the two of us were invited. And we were sitting together doing Q&A for the audience, and he leaned over and he said, Shirley, I'm going to do something that I promised I would do for the rest of my life. He pulled my face around and he kissed me flat on the lips.
Did he?
Yes.
So he had been regretting it ever since that moment.
That's what he said.
All right, I have to ask you, Shirley Jones, was it worth the wait? Really, it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was everything you dreamed of back in the set.
Yes.
Now, another generation, I guess this includes my generation, first heard of you from the Partridge Family. This was a sitcom in which you played the mother of a traveling musical family.
Right.
And you played the mother of the lead singer was played by your stepson.
Right.
Which must have been a little odd.
Well, not at all, no.
Oh.
No, I was the first person cast, and they came to me and said, Shirley, how do you feel about your stepson, David Cassidy? And I said, why? And they said, we're thinking of him to play, you know, the role in the show. So I said, he'd be perfect for it. That's great. And they said, oh, good. We want to make sure you have a good, you know, a good feeling about him.
Yeah.
I said, of course. Well, I was the first person cast, and I went on the set, and they were testing him. And I was on the set, and he turned around, and he saw me. He said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm your mama.
I wanted to ask about this because we were actually looking at clips, and there's you playing the piano and obviously singing. We know you can sing. Were you really playing the piano?
No, of course not.
And, well, I don't know. And then you had these other
nobody
children.
Nobody played in the show.
Well, I have to say, I was going to ask.
Nobody did. And nobody sang in the show except David and me.
It was the least convincing lip syncing have ever seen.
I mean, well, I know. You know, when we had recording sessions, you know, David did the recording. I was there doing the backup, basically.
Yeah.
And in 5 years of doing the show, I had two solos in the show.
That seems like a waste to me. And then, of course, David Cassidy, who played your son, your stepson in real life, became a huge teen idol.
Huge, huge teen idol.
That, and then your other son, Sean Cassidy.
Yes, became another teen idol.
That must have been odd.
It was very odd, yes.
What is it like to have sons who become international sex symbols for 14- and 15-year-olds?
Well, for me, you know, I mean, I was one of these mothers that said, you got to go to college, kids. You got to be a doctors and lawyers. Forget the damn show business. But when it happened to David, Sean looked at me and he said, Ma, listen, if he can do it, I can do it. And literally walked out the door and did it.
Wow. So I knew you, like, again, in these wonderful, innocent roles. I never got around to Elmer Gantry somehow. And then, of course, the Partridge Family. We were playing a sweet all-American mom. And I'm reading your book. And your book has, shall we say, a lot of adult material.
Yes, it does.
Things I will tell you, fascinating read.
I know.
Never wanted to know.
I know. Well, that's the point. When they came to me and asked if I would write a book about my life, and I thought, do I want to do this? I mean, then I thought to myself, why not? I mean, if they know me as you know, Oklahoma Carousel, Mrs. Partridge, all those characters, why can't they know me as me? And I thought, I want to tell people who I am, the life that I had as a child, being married all my life. I mean, you know, I never had affairs with a lot of men. That was not my case. But I was very devoted to the two husbands I've had.
And your devotion led you to do some very interesting things,
That's
which you describe
exactly
in detail.
Absolutely.
Everything you're saying makes perfect sense, and you have every right, and even an obligation, to let your public know who you really are and what
Absolutely.
Your life was like.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I did not want to think about marrying the librarian, getting freaky. That's so. There's now I have to, you know.
But of course, it's called life.
Yes, I guess so. Anyway, Shirley Jones, we're delighted to talk to you, and we've invited you here to play a game that this time we're calling.
Look, it's the Partridge Family.
Okay.
Get them.
So you played a partridge on the Partridge Family, as we've discussed.
That's
but
right.
We missed the episode where rich people stalked you with dogs and tried to shoot you with shotguns.
Oh.
Partridge shooting is a big sport, especially in England.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to ask you three questions about the sport of partridge shooting. Get two right, you'll win our game. Carl, who is Shirley Jones playing for?
Shirley is playing for Junette Sheen of Los Angeles, California.
All right. Ready to play?
Yes.
All right. First question. You begin. If you're a partridge shooter, if you are what is known as a gun, that's what they call you.
Yes.
You begin your day with a ritual known as what? A, the peg draw. B, the partridge cartridge. Or C, the ritual sacrifice to Moloch.
C.
The ritual sacrifice to Moloch. I love the idea of British aristocrats and tweeds with broken shotguns worshipping at the great idol of the Babylonian god Moloch.
Right.
That's, you sound very confident here. It's the peg draw is what it was.
Oh.
Your peg is your... Your peg, you see, is the place in line where you stand with your gun and you draw to see where you will stand.
I see.
All right.
Okay.
You still have two more chances. So if you go and you shoot, if you are a gun on a partridge shoot, you will be assisted by a person known as a what? A, Lord High Executioner. B, the Stuffer. Or C, the Fluffer.
B.
B, the Stuffer. You're right. Very good. The Stuffer is also known as the loader. He loads a fresh shotgun and hands it to you so you never miss a chance to kill
right.
a bird. All right. This is very exciting. You got one right with one to go. If you get this last one right, you will win. What does the well-appointed gun wear on his day on the line of shooting partridges? A, a flexible pair of breeks. B, a sporty funicular. Or C, a wide-brimmed uvula.
Oh. Pair of breeks.
You're going to go for a pair of breeks?
Mm-hmm.
You're right, a pair of breeks.
Nice.
Breeks? Breeks are the terms for the special shooting trousers that guns
right.
wear. Carl, how did Shirley Jones do in our quiz?
Pretty good, Peter. She got two right, and that's good enough to win for Junette Sheen.
Shirley Jones is a star of stage and screen and has been for decades. Her book, Shirley Jones, A Memoir, is out now. Get it, read it. You will never forget it. Shirley Jones, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roxanne Roberts, Charlie Pierce, and Maz Jobrani. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl threatens to shut down the show if we don't raise the rhyme ceiling. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, the annual Monaco Yacht Show attracts the wealthiest of the wealthy. But this year, it wasn't just multi-million dollar yachts being sold. This year, billionaire boat owners could also purchase what?
I'm trying to think what a billionaire boat owner might not have. And I'm coming up short.
Well, it's like $20 million under the sea.
Mm.
They could buy sunken treasure. Well, wait.
They could buy a very long sandwich.
No, we're talking... You're going Jules Verne, the giant octopus.
There's a yellow version
Sherlock,
of it.
Hey, Sherlock, I just gave you a great clue.
It's a submarine.
Yes. Luxury submarines is the answer, yes. 7,000-foot-long sailboats equipped with Paris Hilton. Just don't cut it anymore. In the 1%, if you really want to show everyone just how poor they are in comparison to you, you've got to get a luxury U-boat, or as it's known, an I'm better than you boat. Starting at $4.2 million, the subs are meant to ride alongside your yacht. You get out far enough, you tip it over the edge of your boat, you explore the depths of the Mediterranean, where you get fabulous views of the undersides of other people's yachts. Please note, these luxury subs are not to be confused with Subway's luxury subs.
That's when you know you have too much money. When you're like, you know, I need a submarine.
Right.
Well, I mean, do the torpedo tubes and Polaris missile launchers still work?
That would
be cool.
That would be to be able to torpedo other people's yachts.
Exactly.
I would enjoy that
yeah.
a lot. Maz, in a move that's expected to save police officers time and money, a police department in Holland has started hiring detectives who are what?
Stoned. Holland, I gotta
time.
Go. Yeah. They'd be like, don't worry about it.
No worries.
They've hired police. You said policemen who are
detectives.
This is to save time.
Well, they're very efficient at their jobs.
They're track stars. They are.
That would be useful.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, Detective Bolt, get him.
Right.
I'll give you a hint. Officers Templeton and Ben are highly decorated and have really long tails.
Oh, they're hiring animals.
What kind of animals?
Dogs?
No.
No. Tails?
Skin, hairless tails.
Hairless tails?
Yes.
Are you sure they're not stoned?
I'm pretty sure.
What animal?
I mean...
I'm a little lost here, too.
I don't know the answer. I can only guess.
Guess.
Rats!
Ew.
Yes!
Who's Templeton?
Templeton is the rat from Charlotte's Web, you...
Oh, okay.
Oh,
heartless calves.
What about Ratatouille? You could have given me that.
What is the name of the rat in Ratatouille?
Ratty.
Good try, Mars.
Thanks.
Excellent job.
Thank you.
Dutch criminals will soon feel the short, creepy arm of the law. When a new squad of rat detectives hits the streets, police officers in Rotterdam, are teaming up with the rodents who can supposedly sniff out crime more quickly and easily than police dogs. Instead of Turner and Hooch, it'll be Turner and Ew.
If it works, New York City could have the best police force.
I know. Charlie, the Attorney General of New York has announced the end of a year-long undercover investigation to stop what great scourge of our nation?
Dandruff.
No.
I'm narrowing it down.
I'll give you a hint. It's like when that Yelp review complimented White Castle on its clean bathrooms, you knew something was up.
What? Fraud in, like, consumer websites?
Exactly. Fraud in online reviews.
Ah.
Operation Clean Turf found companies have been pumping sites like Yelp with fake reviews. Spas, bus companies, and strip clubs were among those busted in the sting, raising the question, is there really a man who checks reviews before choosing a strip club? It says here on Yelp that Cheetah Lounge has the nakedest naked girls around. I think I'll find a well-reviewed bus company to take me there directly.
I give it 3 thumbs up. Thank you, Charlie. I debated saying that one. what I did.
Not for very long.
Sorry.
Oh, God.
Some firms in the so-called reputation management industry were even paying people in the Philippines and Bangladesh $1 a pop to glowingly write up stores and restaurants. That does explain this Yelp review of the IHOP in Fort Worth, Texas. Loved the Rooty Tooty Fresh and Fruity. What does Rooty Tooty mean? Please send Visa.
Big Mac is number one American burger. Love it.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. You can find out there about our attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and our first ever show in Cincinnati, Ohio on October 24th, and in Elkhart, Indiana on November 21st. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Justin.
Hey, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Justin, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Tifton, Georgia.
Tifton, Georgia. I don't know where Tifton might be.
Tifton is about an hour south of Macon.
Okay. You're not helping a lot, but we'll just go with it. What do you do there?
Gee, thanks.
I teach agriculture.
You teach agriculture?
Yes, sir. Now,
I've always wondered about this, because I've always thought of farming as something you learn in the land as an apprentice to your father who farmed before you or whatever. So when you teach agriculture in university, what do you teach?
I teach soils and fertilizers, and we've got to fertilize the soil so we can grow crops.
So it's like chemistry class, but with dirt.
Absolutely.
There you go. Well, welcome to the show, Justin. Carl Castle is now going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a big winner. Ready to play?
Yes, sir.
Here is your first limerick.
At 10 Downing Street, there is a spat. Twixt a feline and top bureaucrat. Britain's prime minister looks pretty sinister. Cameron hates Larry the...
cat.
Right! The UK... the UK is roiling after revelations that, and I hope you're sitting down, British Prime Minister David Cameron may not like his cat known as Larry the Cat. A new book claims the cat is a publicity prop, while Downing Street says that's a perfidious lie. Whatever's going on, it's worth noting that here in the US, the president is in a disagreement that has shut down the government and might destroy the world's economy. Across the pond, their leader is in a disagreement that might... at worst, get a couch peed on.
Someone told him that if he has a cat, they're going to like him. Usually British men petting cats are evil.
That's true. Here is your next limerick.
When I come home, Mom's feelings get hurt because I put her in charge of my dirt. But I gave her some hope because my clothes contain soap. I just got a
self-cleaning... Hmm. One more time, please.
Let's hear it again.
When I come home, Mom's feelings get hurt because I put her in charge of my dirt. But I gave her some hope because my clothes contain soap. I just got a self-cleaning...
So there, it rhymes with hurt, dirt.
Dirt.
Yes. Mm. Clothes.
It's self-cleaning.
How about shirt?
How about shirt?
How about shirt? Tide detergent has developed the world's first self-cleaning T-shirt. The shirts are infused with a special washing powder that breaks down stains. Amazingly, the men's version of this shirt even smells its own pits to see if it itself really needs to wash itself or if it can probably go outside just like it is. You know, no one can tell.
Does that mean that, like, there's soap on the, like, when you wear
it? It just kind of self-washes.
What happens if it rains? You bubble?
All right, here is your last limerick. If you get this one right, you still win. So here we go.
Is a dolphin's IQ off the chart? Even sheep can tell faces apart. And the thing with the clicks is a quaint parlor trick. Nah, dolphins aren't really that.
Smart.
Indeed, smart. TV shows such as Flipper and Dr. Quinn, Medicine Dolphin, have led us to believe dolphins are intelligent. But according to new research, they're actually kind of dumb. The stuff they do, it turns out a lot of other animals can do. So look for tourists to start paying good money to swim with, say, eels. The misconception they were smart comes from their high scores on the SAT back when the test was math, verbal, and balancing stuff on your face.
Are you sure? Are you sure this isn't someone just jealous of dolphins who are trying to give them a bad name?
It's a cabal of tuna scientists.
No, it's actually an interesting story. Apparently, back in like the 1960s, there was this very prominent study that came out and said dolphins are amazing and they do all these social things that only higher animals like humans can do, so they must be just as smart as we are. And it turns out that a lot of other animals can do the same kind of social organization and language and communication that dolphins do. For example, chickens. And chickens have the advantage over dolphins. They taste delicious. Carl, how did Justin do in our quiz?
Well, he had two correct answers, Peter, so he's a winner.
Congratulations, Justin. Well done. Thanks for playing. Bye-bye. Now, on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Roxanne Roberts has the lead with 4 points. Charlie Pierce has 3. Maz Jobrani has 2.
Maz, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Because of the government shutdown, President Obama was forced to cancel his scheduled trip to blank.
Malaysia.
Yeah, Asia. On Wednesday, a jury determined that concert promoter AEG Live was not liable in the death
Michael
of
Jackson.
Star Michael Jackson, yes. Federal transportation officials investigated why two commuter trains in blank crashed on Monday.
Two commuter trains in blank. Oh, man, I missed that one.
Strangely enough, Chicago.
Chicago!
The long-awaited IPO for social media giant blank went public on Thursday.
Twitter?
Right. In a good news, bad news scenario, a Swedish man is fine after being nearly crushed by blank.
Oh, a boulder?
No, 1,322 pounds of bacon. Police are investigating an altercation between an SUV and dozens of blanks on
motorcycle.
The West Side Highway.
Motorcycle.
Yes, motorcyclists. In an interview this week, Mia Farrow caused an uproar when she said that her son Ronan's
Frank Sinatra.
Father might actually be, yes, a man in the UK who has been hearing strange noises while driving his car is convinced that it is haunted by blank.
Cameron's cat.
Oh, actually, you know what? A cat. I'm going to give it to you. Yes, he actually thinks it's haunted by a ghost kitten. Not that kitten, but...
Yeah.
69-year-old Malcolm Pennicard says he hears the ghost kitten meow 3 times whenever he passes a certain intersection. He's certain the kitten has unfinished business on Earth. That's why it's sticking around. Pennicard says, and this is true, quote, "It's obviously trying to tell me something, but I don't speak cat language." Carl, how did Maz do in our quiz?
Maz had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points and has taken the lead.
Well done. Okay. Charlie, you are up next. Fill in the blank. In a speech to the UN General Assembly this week, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu called the president of blank a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Iran.
Right. According to reports from Reuters, top investors at Microsoft want blank to step down as company chairman.
Bill Gates.
Right. 2 federal judges this week determined that search engine giant blank could face wiretapping charges.
Google.
Right. On Wednesday, the FBI shut down the Silk Road, an internet site dealing in blank.
Marijuana.
Right. Officials were forced to close the pool at Berkeley High School in California after the water started blanking.
Turning to wine.
No, burning the body hair off of the water polo players.
Ooh.
After getting national coverage for a 13-hour filibuster, Texas legislator Wendy Davis announced Thursday she is blanking.
Running for governor.
Yes, indeed. The president of Berea Pasta Company apologized again this week for saying that he would never feature blank people in his company's ads.
Gay people.
Right. Somehow a party did not ensue when a boat filled with blank washed ashore in a blank in Santa Cruz, California this week.
Beer.
No. A party did not ensue when a boat filled with 80 pounds of weed washed ashore in a nude beach. Police were able to recover all of the 80 pounds of marijuana as sad, naked onlookers looked by helplessly, lamenting their lack of pockets.
The remark...
Carl, how did Charlie do in our quiz?
6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Charlie has the lead.
Well done, Charlie. All right. Carl, how many does Roxanne need to win?
6 correct answers.
All right, here we go, Roxanne. This is for the game, fill in the blank. Reactions to last Sunday's finale of the TV show Blank were overwhelmingly positive.
Breaking Bad.
Yes, indeed. Best known for military thrillers like The Hunt for Red October, author Blank died Tuesday night at age 66.
Tom Clancy.
Right. After a suspicious package was found in one of the terminals, the airport in Blank was shut down for nearly 5 hours.
Jacksonville?
Right. The Vatican announced this week that Popes John Paul II and John the 23rd will be declared blanks on April 27th.
Saints.
Right. Fed up with snickering kids, Connecticut school officials are considering banning the offensive term blank.
The offensive term teacher.
No, the offensive term hump day for Wednesday. The insider trading trial against reality TV star and Dallas Mavericks owner blank began this Tuesday.
Mark Cuban.
Right, after dancing with a torn quadricep, science guy blank was eliminated this week from Dancing with the Stars.
Bill Nye.
Yeah. Aww. Police in Minnesota arrested a man for public intoxication after he tried to make a phone call on a blank.
In a phone booth.
No, he tried to make a phone call on a $20 bill.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, it is. Police first noticed the man was a bit tipsy when they asked him for ID, and he tried to hand them his $20 bill. And then the officers asked him if he wanted to call a friend for a ride. He said, yeah, and he proceeded to try to call his friend with the $20 bill. Sadly, his friend didn't pick up, so police took him into custody. Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
She needed six correct answers. She had six correct answers.
Well
so
done.
With 16 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's champion.
Congratulations, Roxanne. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will be the unexpected benefit of the government shutdown. But first, let me tell you all that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And Subaru, where all vehicles are built in zero landfill plants. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities. The National Braille Press and NPR, information at LumberLiquidators.com. Progressive, offering policyholders the option to bundle home and auto insurance coverage. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. And the National Association of Realtors and Advocate for Home Ownership. More at HouseLogic.com/homeownership. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions' Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover, Miles Dernboss, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our CFO is Ann Nien. Production coordinator is, as usual, Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillag. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the silver lining of the government shutdown? Roxanne Roberts.
Tea Party conservatives, using their spare time, will pick up that nice autobiography of Shirley Jones and will be so shocked they will be unable to speak for a week.
Could happen. Charlie Pierce.
Next on C-SPAN, Book Talk with Brian Lamb and Honey Boo Boo.
And Maz Jobrani.
John Boehner will be forced to spend time inside the Capitol building trying to find a resolution, making him lose his tan and helping him once again find his natural color.
Well, if we see any of these benefits, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Maz Jobrani, Roxanne Roberts, Charlie Pierce, all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.